Well, I'm happy to have at the Caregiver Smile Summit, Cheryl Sharoon. I said that correctly, right?
Yes.
Cheryl is President, CEO at Sharoon, Inc., founder of Baby Boom Health. She's a registered nurse and graduate of Kraus Irving Memorial School of Nursing with over 30 years of diverse experience in the healthcare arena. She holds a BSN, is a certified Alzheimer's trainer, legal nurse consultant, and healthcare compliance officer. She has experience in the health insurance industry, disease management, physician office management, short-term rehab, and skilled nursing. There you go. Quite a resume. Thank you for joining us, Cheryl.
My pleasure.
All right. So, you know, I imagine that a lot of times people, you know, especially if they're not health professionals like ourselves, often leave a physician's office frustrated and confused because they feel maybe their questions weren't answered or they didn't have enough time. How can our family caregivers better prepare for appointments?
You know, Anthony, that happens so often. It's happened to myself. We go in with the best intentions. We have our questions in mind. The doctor comes in and takes over the whole appointment. And what I mean by that is he gets into the assessment, asking questions, and then the time is up. So how I have provided a checklist on how to be better prepared so that you can take control of that appointment and not leave feeling frustrated and confused. First, make a list of your questions. Bring two copies to the office. Give one to the medical assistant or the nurse when she comes in and to take your vitals. So the doctor has an opportunity to review those questions prior to entering the exam room. This will give him a better opportunity to be prepared, time efficient, and answer your questions. Prioritize your questions. Make sure the most difficult, most important question to you is number one on the list, so there's ample time to address it. Bring a notebook. Take notes. Or bring someone with you. And if you do bring someone with you, please introduce that person to the physician, letting them know, because of HIPAA laws, that it is perfectly okay for them to communicate, discuss these matters in front of them. Or bring a recorder and record the conversation. Be honest. Remember, your doctor has pretty much heard everything. And the more honest you can be, the better it's going to be for him to make an assessment and to develop a care plan that's appropriate for you. Describe your symptoms. If you're suffering from high blood pressure, hypertension, bring your blood pressure log if you're checking those blood pressures at home. It's valuable for the physician. If you're a diabetic, testing your blood sugars every day, the same thing. Bring that blood sugar log. Gives the doctor a lot of valuable information. If you're describing what the reason for the appointment, if you're experiencing pain, nausea, or vomiting, be as exact as you possibly can be. Let's talk about pain. What's the level of pain? When did it start? Where is it? What kind of pain is it? Is it dull, aching, throbbing, burning? That gives a doctor a lot of information to put those puzzle pieces together to come up with hopefully a diagnosis that can address those symptoms. If you're suffering, again, from white coat syndrome, which means you get nervous when you're going to a doctor's office, which I'm sure we all do, I certainly do, again, bring someone with you. Or let the doctor know, you know, doctor, I'm really nervous. And he'll be very compassionate and give you that ample time to address what your needs are.
So let me ask you, do you find using electronic records helps? I know I was caregiver for my mom until she passed about a year ago, and it would drive her absolutely crazy. She was 94, and she had all her cognition. And it would drive her crazy because that generation was used to, I pick up the phone, I get put on hold, they might call me back in 3 or 4 days, and I would go right on the electronic record and send a note and have an answer within a half an hour, and it would drive her bonkers. But do you find that, at least for the clientele that you work with, that they embrace this?
They do, Anthony. And what's important to discuss with the patient is to give you the authorization to access that portal. And in most doctors' offices and physicians, it's called the patient portal. Once they give you that access, you can go on. And what I found valuable is I can read the notes if I'm not attending the appointment, and I can then better discuss with the patient and explain to them the reason for new medications, tests, and so on, or what the treatment plan is. And you're right. To get a question answered, a lot of the doctors have gone to email, and they will address those emails faster than they will a phone call.
Right. Great. Thank you. So how can a caregiver balance a desire to advocate for mom or dad, particularly when, like in my case, when they're fully cognizant? So, you know, my mom had all her wits about her and she was intelligent enough to ask the right questions. So if you're going to the doctor with mom or dad and they have the wherewithal to be able to advocate for themselves, how do you strike a balance on and being able to make sure that they don't miss anything and you're not overstepping?
That's an excellent question, Anthony, because that's so important, especially to your mom or dad. You know, we have the best intentions, but we have to also remember that we need to maintain their independence and their self-confidence. So get a game plan before you go into the office. Ask your mom or dad, how do you want it handled? And generally, what I have been told, even with my clients, is, Cheryl, jump in anytime. If, and then you can give them a gentle reminder. Talk about what there is on their mind. And then you can always say, hey, mom, did you remember to ask doctor or tell doctor this or that? And they feel they're in control because they should be. It's their health care. And again, we don't want to treat them like children. We want to maintain their independence and we want to focus on their abilities.
That's great. And you're absolutely right. So how do you voice your desire, if you're not satisfied with your physician, or you, it just makes sense to have a second opinion, how do you voice your desires for that and go about getting a second opinion?
First and foremost, you have to have good communication and good chemistry with your physician. If you don't, then really you should be looking for a second opinion. And when you do have that chemistry, it's very easy to open up that question and say, you know, doctor, I really feel that maybe this is time for a second opinion. What do you feel? And generally, they're very open to that. Everyone likes another set of eyes looking at something. We're all human. We can make mistakes. We can overlook something. We're in a team. We're doing what's best for that patient. And the patient really is our boss, if you're the physician. So patients have to remember that. You're assembling a team of professionals that are working on your behalf. You're paying them. So just whatever your needs are, if you say you get a diagnosis as you have cancer, what your options are for treatment, a surgeon, radiologist, oncologist. Of course, if you're talking to a surgeon, they're going to be biased. That's going to be, you know, that's what we need to do. Is that the best treatment? I don't know. So it's always good to have that communication, sign the necessary medical release for medical information to be released to another physician. And then ask the doctor, who would you recommend? Go out, ask your friends, people that you have the most respect for. Do you have any recommendation for whatever your need is? That pretty much is your best way. Don't be afraid to broach that question. A lot of people are. They're afraid the doctor's going to get mad at me. They're not going to want to treat me anymore. I'm looking for a lawsuit. That's not the case. It's for your good. And really, you're working with the doctor and when you get the same advice from doctor number two, guess where you go back? To that doctor who you have the most confidence in.
Great. Thank you. The patient is the boss. I like that for sure. So I know for some of our viewers, they may be tuning in because maybe recently mom or dad was diagnosed with dementia or had a serious accident and all of a sudden things change. Where do they start from that point?
You know, when you get hit with something, a diagnosis like dementia, cancer, something that is just sudden onset, you have to become an expert real quick. And you have to know how to approach it, what questions to ask. Let's talk about dementia. Well, the first and most important question is my mother or father safe to live on their own? What stage are we at? What are we looking at? What, you know, as a daughter, what do I need to be concerned about? Can they take their own medication? So there's a lot of ifs and questions when you get a diagnosis like that. You may need to look for a assisted living that specializes in memory care. And they still can maintain their independence, which is so important because whenever anyone has dementia, the rule is, the best rule, in my belief, is to focus on what their abilities are, not what they can't do. We can fill in that part. But again, maintaining their independence for as long as we possibly can, letting them do for themselves, because that is so important in helping to slow down that progression from one stage to another.
And that's so true. And as a member of the Dementia Action Alliance, I mean, that's kind of what our whole platform is about. It's about recognizing that all the things that people still can do. And, you know, we have several members who have early onset disease, and they even joke that some of their friends argue with them that they actually don't have the disease because they can really function well in certain circumstances. But then they'll tell you, you didn't see me behind the scenes sometimes. So anyway.
And that's so true, Anthony, because I know from my own personal experience with my mom and dad, my mother had vascular dementia, but when something would happen to my father, she would rise to the occasion. He was a retired physician, she was a retired nurse, and my God, her nursing skills would come right back, and everyone would look at me, you know, if the EMTs were there, and say, your mom is as sharp as a tack.
Exactly. All right, let's move on to one of my favorites, since my mother had 15 different ones, medication management. That was a big part of my caregiving duty. Now, again, mom was fully cognizant, and she actually knew how to separate her pills, and she knew when she was running out, and that's the time she knew when to call the doctor. But not everybody is in that position. So when the medicine cabinet is sort of bursting at the seams, how do you take control of all that?
When you go to your appointment with your physician, what I recommend to my clients is to take their medications with them. Take the bottles. Talk to the doctor and see if there's any of those medications that maybe we can drop off. Maybe we can start reducing the dosage or the frequency, which would eliminate some of the side effects from that medication if they're having any. And in turn, they would drop off that medication we were using to address those side effects. If they've been hospitalized, they've been sent to the hospital because they've had what they call a change of condition. When you have a change of condition, new medications generally are added before you leave and while you're in the hospital. You come home, you're taking those, you don't ask the doctor, do I stop taking anything I've already been taking? And so, unfortunately, a lot of times, the patient is now taking duplicate medications because they forgot to ask or the doctor forgot to say, stop this one, take this one. So it's always a good idea to take everything, even if it's vitamins, supplements, herbals. Some herbal medications can be very dangerous because they don't interact well with a prescription drug.
Great, thank you. I know a lot of people like to go on the web to get their information. I joke with my wife that I call her by her maiden name when she assumes a different role, like, you know, she's a doctor or a meteorologist or whatever it might be. And luckily, she's not here in the house as I'm saying this. We might have a third party to this interview. But what sources on the web do you can people go to and trust?
You know, that is a real difficult question because so much on the World Wide Web. And what is legitimate and what isn't for a non-medical person, even a medical person, you really don't know. My advice is to go to a reputable site, WebMD, Mayo Clinic, the Center of Cancer Association, the NIH, something that you know and trust. But more importantly, when you're reading something and you feel that maybe this is a medication for you or this is treatment for you or whatever the case may be, download that information. Bring it with you to the appointment. And this way, the doctor can review it with you and give you his expert advice as to this would work. If so, why it would work. If it won't, why won't it work? But give him that information so that he can help you make a decision that's right for you.
Great. So tell me a little bit about, maybe our viewers would like to know, you know, at some point when they can't handle it anymore, or need to reach out for help, exactly what you do and what patient advocates do, because this is a new and growing profession, and I don't think enough people know about it and know enough to reach out to people like yourself.
You're exactly right, Anthony. It is a new profession, but as I look back in my career as a nurse, We have been advocating for a patient from day one when we were students. So it comes pretty natural to us. People, especially older people, they think they view it as a weakness if they have to ask for help. But we all need help at some point in time during an illness. We need some hand-holding. We just maybe need reassurance that we're doing it the right way. When you feel overwhelmed, you're depressed, you don't have the energy to put forth that time and effort into researching and educating yourself on really what the diagnosis is, what your treatment options are, what could be done, what should be done, and so on. That's the time to reach out to a patient advocate and ask for that help, that support. Now, once you get involved with a patient advocate, it doesn't mean that you are it's a life sentence and you always have to use them. It could be an on-call basis or whenever there's an illness or that you feel the need. You utilize their services, and when you don't need them, that's the way I do my practice, you don't have to use them. But what I found is you've built that trust, and maybe you're not actually working in the role of a patient advocate, meaning there's a crisis, but what I'm doing now with my clients is I'm working as their health coach. I'm helping them be proactive and prevent something from happening, or educating them along with their team, their medical team, on how to live within their disease process, how to manage that disease and prevent it from becoming worse.
Great. And it's important for our caregivers to remember that they have to take care of their own health while they're taking care of mom or dad.
Absolutely. And you know what? That's the lost piece. Everyone's focusing on that patient and no one's really looking at that son or daughter or wife or husband who's the caregiver and is just mentally and physically exhausted.
Yeah. Well, Cheryl, I want to thank you for joining us on the Caregiver Smile Summit. This has been really worthwhile and a lot of great information that I'm sure our viewers are going to enjoy and help them on their caregiving journey. Thank you.
My pleasure, Anthony. Thank you for having me.